Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the only podcast that spends its LTIR money on a rad jet ski and is suddenly very nervous. It's definitely out of warranty. I don't know what we're going to do. Taylor, hello. Happy to see you today.
Hey, we're here, and there's hockey to talk about.
There's hockey. Of course, preseason hockey, the best kind of hockey, and we're recording Wednesday night, the day after Dallas banished the ghosts of that Game 7 with a victory over the St. Louis Blues, and things are looking up, I would say. Obviously somewhat facetiously, the results, as we've firmly established over the course of this preseason, don't matter as much. But I will say, I think it's been more good than bad over the last couple of days. I think that's a fair assessment of where we sit.
I mean, yeah, definitely more good. I mean, anytime you get a win is nice. And
get that dub.
The team won't go winless in the preseason, so that's a plus. And also, we haven't seen overtime in the last couple of games, so like, whoa, maybe don't talk too loudly about that, because it absolutely means that tomorrow on Thursday, depending on when you're listening to this, are still going in a, you know, multi-round shootout that never seems to end, because that's my kind of luck. So like, we're just gonna go ahead and assume it went like 12 rounds.
Hey, the positive is, if the shootout has gone 12 rounds, the Dallas Stars haven't lost yet.
Well, that's true.
I mean, I'm just trying to find, I'm bright side guy tonight is apparently the role I'm going to play. So we have that going for us. And you know, there are some storylines, though. There are some things that are legitimately interesting, even at this stage in the preseason, beyond just like, hey, guys are still upright and physically looking fit. A couple of areas I want to hit. The first being last night, Dallas, of course, secured a 3-1 victory over the St. Louis Blues. And in line with, you know, as he said, right, a bonus has been letting a single goaltender start and finish each of the preseason games. And last night, that was free agent acquisition Braden Holtby, who was able to secure a 27 save victory and continues a trend of honestly looking pretty good, over the course of this preseason so far. And Taylor, do you think, we'll start with the fun question and get into the specifics. Do you think that his play has clarified the situation in the Dallas crease as we approach the start of the regular season?
I don't know if it's so much his play that's clarified things as the play of Jake Ottinger and Anton Khudobin has not really helped clear things up. I mean,
catching some strays. He's just a friendly otter, Taylor.
Coming out firing today. I don't know. It's so tough for me to evaluate, and this is when I'm really glad that I just get to sit in the press box and espouse whatever I choose to say from there, and don't have to actually make decisions. It's really fascinating in the sense that Braden Holtby has played 5 periods of preseason hockey, and all 5 of those periods came against the St. Louis Blues. And
he's got their number, clearly.
And like, I think we all know that the Blues play a certain style. It's a kind of low scoring affair. They tend to be more defensively structured, and they're not really known as like a high flying offense, which in some ways can make your goaltending look better than maybe it is. But in getting to see Holtby play a full game at the American Airlines Center on Wednesday, I can say that he did come up with some really good saves, and not the kind where, you know, you're scrambling and you get lucky and your toe, you know, just gets the tip of the puck and shoots it away. It was like sound body positioning and tracking of the puck to be able to put yourself exactly where the shooter was going to try to hit the rebound. So in a lot of ways, especially when the Stars kind of fell apart in the second period and started taking a bunch of penalties, and there was a little parade to the Bucks. He came up huge in a lot of ways, but he also did get a little bit of help from the post, which is the greatest sound ever.
Any goalie will tell you the only reason that puck's hitting the post is because he knew it wasn't going in.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
two of those, and he even said after the game, if those go in, you're looking at a very different game. But, you know, at the same time, like, hockey is all a lot of skill, a lot of structure, a lot of system, and then a little bit of luck, too. So, I mean, you can't fault him for that.
No, certainly not. And then the other thing you have to take into account in his play is, you know, one of the other trends in the preseason is you get, let's just call them variable rosters, right? But in the game against St. Louis, you know, just skimming the ice time, you know, Braden Schenn, 18 minutes, Rob Thomas, you know, in between singing his songs, giving people shoes, 19 minutes, Brandon Saad, 20 minutes. Like, he played against the capital B Blues. And their big guns got the minutes that they would get if this game mattered. So, you know, yes, you have to grade on a curve for the preseason. And yes, you have to factor in that for the most part, guys, especially veterans, especially people that are already on rosters, are approaching this far more from the perspective of how do I get my body and my game right for when all of this matters? Like, that, those are very true statements. But at the same time, much like you're saying, you know, if those pucks hit the post, well, those pucks didn't hit the post, right? He's playing against what was largely an A team playing 18 minutes. And all you can really do is look at what happened on the ice. And you know, last night and thus far this preseason, those results have been encouraging, right? He's played well. He's made saves. He's kept his team in games, and he's gotten wins. And, you know, all he can really do is that. And as you pointed out at the start of this conversation, you can look at the play of Ottinger and you can look at the play of Khudobin, and they're not doing that. And at some point, even if the games themselves maybe don't matter, like, individually, the trend line does. And the more this happens, right, it's got, what, about another week to go. There's some pretty, you know, if tomorrow night, right, if tomorrow night's game was the season opener instead of a preseason game, do you think that Rick Bowness would be reluctant or, you know, unwilling to put Holtby in the pipe?
I don't think he would be reluctant at all, because I think he would, if he puts him in there, he's expecting whoever is in the net to go out and give his team the best chance to win that night. So I wouldn't say he'd be reluctant. I also just think that looking at the roster and, you know, performance and, yeah, I mean, like, and this is where I'm glad I don't have to make the decision, because you could argue that Braden Holtby, at least in his full game, had the benefit of a pretty NHL quality roster in front of him in terms of just Dallas Stars. You know, he had John Klingberg in front of him. He had Ben, Sagan, Radulov, you know, a lot of those guys that are going to be on the roster on opening night. Whereas Ottinger and Khudobin have had varying degrees of that. And I wouldn't necessarily say they've had the best NHL quality. Like, Braden Holtby probably had the best quality roster in front of him, and then was helped by the fact that you're playing the low scoring Blues. So how do you assess, like, his night where he's faced like 28 shots versus, you know, Ottinger, who may have faced more against the Florida Panthers, and the Florida Panthers are a lot more high flying of a team and a lot more aggressive on their offense. And, you know, so, like, I'm glad I don't have to make the choice, but, you know, objectively, right now, if the season started tomorrow, I think Holtby would probably be my starter until he wasn't anymore. That makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, the question that I have, and maybe you've got some more insight on this, is, you know, the thing that we're not seeing is whether or not the play on the ice mirrors what's happening during practice and line rushes, and what Mike Valley is seeing as he works with the, you know, works with the trio and kind of tries to get all this in line. So that's the big piece, because, you know, as we pointed, that matters more than what happened last night. But, you know, that's the piece that I think you know, would really provide a little bit more clarity is, you know, day in and day out, when the team is going through drills and getting systems in place and all that, which goaltender is performing the best in those situations?
Well, I think I would take Jeff Reese's opinion over Mike Valley.
Yeah.
Mike Valley doesn't work for the organization anymore. Just saying.
Oh, dear.
Much like the Dallas Stars and the St. Louis Blues felt a little 2016 last night, I guess.
Yeah, that reference
pulling
is dated.
That into the
holy smokes.
Into the podcast. Hey, man. It's still preseason. We're all shaking off the rust.
Shake off the rust. I did to save my blushes. I did have one question. And just to pre-prepare the rile up train for the Dallas Stars. If I were to ask you, Taylor, which Stars forward had the most ice time against the St. Louis Blues? And if you're looking, then shame on you. Who would that be?
Oh, man, I should know this because I was in the building.
I will give you a hint. It's not an answer that Dallas Stars fans are going to be not riled up by.
It was Blake Coma, wasn't it?
Oh, man, I wish. That would have been a better answer, but close. Close. It was Radek Foxa. Radek Foxa played 19 minutes and 57 seconds in that game, including...
Well, part of that's going to be driven by the fact that the Stars took a lot of penalties. They took four.
That's true.
One of them was a 5-on-3.
But I'm going to ask you another question, Taylor, and you'll probably get the answer because of why I'm asking. Did Radek Foxa play more on the power play or more on the penalty kill last night?
Oh, he played more on the power play because he was like the center of the second unit.
That's exactly right. And it was admittedly, it was close, 304 to 302. But, you know, that's the sort of thing. There is a certain vocal segment of Stars fandom that if, you know, sure, the preseason doesn't necessarily matter as much. But if you were to show them the score sheet from a game in the middle of November, let's say, and Radek Foxa was leading the team in both total ice time and was second in power play ice time, he was third. Apologies in terms of forward. Sagan and Peterson played more than him on the power play. But regardless to say, Radek Foxa is putting out that kind of ice time in the middle of November. We're probably seeing
terribly wrong.
That's right. I mean, it's interesting to see him that involved. I guess it means the wrist is feeling pretty good, and Dallas won. So hey, I guess that means that he, you know, did what was expected of him. But for a fandom that's, let's say, been burned by some interesting roster usage decisions in the past, that's certainly not going to allay any fears as we head into the new season.
You know, it's so fascinating when you think about ice time, and this is a disconnect between Stars fans and the coaching staff. The coaching staff actually looks more at the number of shifts that each forward plays.
Yeah.
Not
I remember
so
we got
much.
That talk back when Gurionov was struggling for time.
But I think it's worth repeating. Yeah. So they look at that at the number of shifts, not ice time, because, and this is especially true if you watch a guy like Alexander Radulov. Radulov friggin' loves to go out there and extend his shift.
Radulov plays like a dude in a rec league that knows that if he gets to the bench, he's gonna have to wait 3 minutes and he might as well just stay out.
He was like out there blocking shots in a preseason game. I mean, the dude has like one level. That's it. It is like 110%.
I mean, that's, yeah, if he didn't play hard, it would be indefensible. But, you know, you sort of have to be, you have to be the effort guy to get away with that crap.
Yeah, it's fascinating. But I think, you know, to Bonus's point, and I think it makes sense to a degree, if you have guys that are consistent about extending their shift, you know, 5 seconds longer than your line mates doesn't seem like a lot in an isolated shift, but over the course of a game in which you take 15, 20 shifts, that adds up a lot. And so that's one thing that I would just caveat, like, you do have to kind of pay attention to number of shifts.
You do.
That's more relevant and blah, blah,
and
blah.
I don't disagree with that, but you can quibble with me on number of shifts all you want, but Radek Foxa playing 5 more minutes than Jason Robertson and 6 more minutes than Denis Gurianov and 4 more minutes than Alexander Radulov, right? Those are not, you know, yeah, with Sagan at 18-14, you can, I agree with you, right? That's a shift here, that's a shift there. But like, again, Jason Robertson, 5 minutes less than Radek Foxa, that is not a recipe for, and again, I'm not harping on this one particular game because it's the preseason and who knows what the coaching staff was trying to look at. But again, in a theoretical where we see this, again, the team has done this before in games that do matter. And in my opinion, right, it makes me a little bit nervous to see that, because there are players that should be on the ice more that aren't. And they've done that before outside of games that don't matter.
I don't disagree. The only but I would offer to that, if it were, is maybe it wasn't so much about ramping up his minutes as it was managing the top guys' minutes.
Yeah, fair. Totally.
Jason Robertson, like, yeah, would you love to see him get 25 minutes in a game that doesn't matter? Sure, like, great experience, whatever. But that's also 25 minutes in which he could get majorly hurt.
And if his, and to your point, if his game's right, if you're, you know, Rick Bonus, you've got a week to go. And if you're looking at, especially knowing how last season turned out in terms of injuries and effort, right? You're looking down the roster and you're kind of checking those boxes and saying, okay, who's ready for the season? Who still needs work? You're right. There's a million different reasons why in this particular game and in the preseason, it doesn't matter, right? Okay, Robertson looks good. He's ready to go. So we're just going to go into some, you know, we're going to keep him warm, but we're going to go into some, you know, some control, right? Same with other players. Again, it's just the historical trend, right? It's a red flag, right? When we sat down this, you know, many months ago doing some of these over the summer podcasts, I remember talking to, I think it was Mark, but we were talking about things to worry about as Stars fans. And one of the biggest things that kept coming up was that even if the team gets healthy and has the right players, if they don't use those players correctly, it may not matter. And so again, the only reason this registers and the only reason this was interesting to me is this is a problem the team has had in under this staff, and it raised an eyebrow for me.
I mean, there's a lot of things under this staff that have raised a lot of eyebrows in the preseason. I mean, like, seriously, when you think about it, the fact that the team continues to commit really terrible penalties, the fact that the team, you know, tends to kind of fall off in the third period, the fact
third period
that the
turtle
team
baby
hasn't figured
Maple
out how to play a full 60 minutes, like, come on. Yeah, we're going to start calling them Maple and Honey, and it's going to be Maple is turtling when you're down a goal, and Honey is going to be turtling when you're up a goal.
I mean, the Dallas Stars are a versatile team. They can turtle in any circumstances at any time. You know, you don't expect it, and all of a sudden, boom, turtle time. But again, we're trying to keep this positive. Okay, so we're mad about ice time. That's fine. There are a couple of interesting points. We talked a little bit about Holtby, you know, really pushing for time in the net, and to me, two of the other names that jump out on the roster as I look at this late stage in the preseason, it's kind of interesting to see Maverick Bork and Jake Peterson still in the lineup with this team.
Yeah, and each of them brings something a little bit different. I think what you like about Maverick Bork's game is how creative he can be out on the ice, and it's not so much that he's been creative in the sense of scoring goals, but he has been creating offense, which is, you know, a nuance, and I get it. But, you know, he's made those around him better and given them better looks. And so I think that's something that, you know, is
well,
really
that's
interesting.
It's interesting, and it's a need for this roster, right? Dallas, even Dallas's elite offensive players have sometimes skewed more towards the finisher executor portion of the offense versus the guy that's creating in the first place. It's why we talk about John Klingberg having such inordinate value. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Having a guy like Bork that not just contributes, but contributes, let's call it earlier in the opportunity. That's really interesting to this team because as we talk about roles and where people slot in, there aren't a ton of guys that do what he does in this roster. And that's probably part of why he's hanging around.
It probably is. And honestly, you know, it would surprise me if the Stars, barring an injury, at least, let me just put that out there. But I would be surprised if they kept him on the roster for opening night. Now, he is 19 years old. Which means it's NHL or bust. He either has to play in the NHL or he has to go back to his junior team. But the Stars could, if they so chose to, carry an extra forward and maybe not an extra defenseman.
No, I don't. I think by rule, the Dallas Stars aren't allowed to do that.
But if they wanted to and they could make space for it, they could keep Bork up for up to the first 9 games before having to make the decision of burning his first year of an ELC or send him back to his junior team. So I would imagine that his contract status more than anything could.
Yeah, I think could you're mean right.
Him going back to juniors, but the fact that he's had an extended look, you know, gives a lot of confidence to him as he heads back to juniors, you know, and a big season for him because, you know, probably starting next season, I would have to look at the cutoff of the dates because it's weird and Canadian juniors is very strange and they got a lot of rules, but I believe he'll probably age out after this year. He'll be 20 next season, which means he'd be eligible to go and play in the AHL or make the NHL roster. So you like to give him that confidence to have a big year this year and make a lot of strides and, you know, force the issue next season.
Well, and I think as well, you hear about players, you know, the difference at the NHL level versus even the high junior level. And if you're the Stars and you're high on this kid, there's probably, if you think he's, you know, within a year close, there's probably a value in giving him more training camp reps with the big kids than having him go home early.
Yeah. And he even said himself after the game on Wednesday that, you know, when the veterans got to main training camp, it was like a switch flipped on for him and he had a lot more confidence, which I found a lot really interesting because I think a lot of young guys would be more likely to be intimidated than to be confident around, you know, playing out on a line with the likes of Tyler Seguin or Jamie Benn, who've been in the league and have, you know, been around the block a few times and know what it's like to play there. So, you know, that's really interesting. His playmaking ability is probably the most fascinating aspect in what could be his dark horse to making the NHL roster.
Yeah, and I think dark horse is the right word. He would have to do something fairly phenomenal, but I think he does have a path due to the uniqueness of how he contributes relative to the rest of the Stars' NHL level roster. More interestingly, right, in a slightly different case when we talk about Jacob Peterson, of course, he's a couple of years older, he's 22, and he has been playing in, you know, in a higher level league, albeit on a larger sheet in Europe. And so from a, you know, you talked about how with Maverick, it's NHL or bust, not quite the same with Peterson, right? He'll be in the AHL if he doesn't make the NHL team. But again, not only has he stuck around, but he has been largely paired with the NHL guys as the team has continued through drills and continued through training camp. So he's another one where it seems like the Stars are really seriously taking a look at him and what role he might play with this team.
And they should. I mean, when you realistically start to pencil out the NHL roster, you know, one of the things that constantly gets brought up about contenders is the depth. And I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning have 3 scoring lines that they can throw at you. And so if you can find a guy to come in and have some instant chemistry, which he seems to have right now, I believe he played on a line with Sagan and Radulov for a little bit. And then
that's a sweet gig.
With Ben, you know, if you can find like a way to unlock some veteran players' offense by putting a guy like Peterson on his line, I think it's something that you absolutely have to look at. I was gonna say, because I mean, would you rather give teams 2 or 3 lines to have to choose from? Like, pick your poison. Which would you
That's the modern NHL, right? You're no longer in a league where 2 lines attack and 2 lines defend and never the 2 shall meet, right? The other interesting thing to me about Peterson is when we're talking about Bork, right, age is an issue. He is a smaller player. Peterson is listed at 6'1", 180 pounds, right? So, no, he's not, you know, he's not Tom Wilson out there. But, again, at 22 and at that size, he's not size limited either. So he is a player that, you know, if he can get his performance where he needs it, you can look at that and say there really isn't a physical maturity gap either. So to me, that makes him, you know, what really jumps out to me, what he feels like, and this is a pie in the sky projection. I'm not saying he has the same ceiling. I'd need to ask, you know, Derek or Mark. They've got a finger on the pulse there. But it reminds me a lot of how the Dallas Stars used Hynes those first couple of years, right, where he was primarily an AHL, you know, mainstay, right, scoring forward, top six option. But whenever the team in Dallas needed a jolt, right, he was the first guy on the bus up 35. And it feels like that may be the spot that they're kind of grooming Peterson for. And like, yeah, because of, right, if everything else works out like they want it to, then there probably isn't a spot for him in the position they want him to play. And he'll probably go to Cedar Park and see if he can help the Texas Stars and see if he can get those, you know, get acclimated to North American rinks and blah, 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 right? But what seems like they're doing is looking at him and saying, okay, well, if somebody tails off, if somebody gets hurt, if all of a sudden we have a hole to fill, we're going to need a guy to call up. And, you know, he feels pretty firmly in that mix right now.
For sure. You know, and at the same time, I think that the trick will be if you can really get truly three scoring lines that you can roll with, and you can get in quality minutes in a more offensive style and like those offensive minutes. If you can't, you would rather have him playing top line minutes down in Austin or down in Cedar Park. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he bounces back and forth this year. But I mean, man, he has really impressed. He's impressed me during drills. Like he hasn't seemed to miss a beat with the fact that, you know, on a smaller sheet of ice, your angles are different. And so some guys takes a little bit to adjust. He's been like, oh, okay, like I'll just do this instead.
There was a quote by Bonus that really stood out to me, and I'm going to paraphrase, right? So please don't hold me to the exact language. But he was talking about the Arizona game, and he was talking about how he felt like, I think it was between the first and the second period, but at one point they thought their forecheck was out of whack, and they needed to adjust. They went into the room, and they needed to put it up on the board and fix a couple of things. And Bonus had a quote about Peterson talking about how he got it. And he was one of the guys where they, you know, in the middle of a game, in intermission, they made a tactical adjustment. And then when they got out on the ice the next period, Peterson had picked it up already. And he just talked about how one of the most impressive things about him was, again, exactly what you're talking about, that he has clearly, you know, this isn't a kid that has been playing against other kids. This is a, you know, a young man that has been in a professional league. And the coaching staff, I think, is really liking having that, you know, having that. And this is a team that does skew older, right? So having a pair of, you know, fresh young legs that can play in the top six if necessary and, you know, take care of some defensive responsibilities is, you know, looking at this roster, right? That's a luxury Dallas is probably going to need this season. And, you know, good on Peterson for staking an early claim there.
For sure. Yeah, it's really fascinating. I can't wait to see how the lines ultimately end up shaking out.
Yeah, and that's I think where we'll go ahead and put this podcast into the barn and talking a little bit about those lines. And you know, you've seen the practices, you've watched the games as well, right? In your opinion, what do you think the, you know, if you've got, you know, actual names, that's fine, but what do you think the philosophy, how is Dallas appearing to be shaping themselves heading into the season? Besides making sure that Como and Fox will lead the team in time on ice.
Okay, can I just say something about the fact that you've got, okay, you said Como. This triggered me. In the game on Wednesday, and I know unless you were in the building, you're probably never going to see this play, like, ever, but I swear they better be using this during film sessions because John Klingberg had committed a penalty. And was sitting in the box. And when's the last time you actually saw the Stars spring a guy out of the box for like an instant scoring chance? It's been a minute. They don't do it often. They're often pinned in their own zone.
Well, they often get to take the face off at center ice after a penalty.
Also, there's that. So they actually did. They were able to get the puck loose and get it to Klingberg, and he took it in the middle of the neutral zone and went skating in towards Jordan Binnington from St. Louis. And I'm sitting there going, oh, he's about to just, you know, just roof it over Bennington, you know, just take a nice hard wrist shot on him. And then he, like, slowed down and waited for the trailing forward. And the trailing forward was Blake Como. And it's like,
that seems like a very Klingberg thing to do.
I don't know if it's just like, look, nobody makes it to the NHL level without being able to actually, like, score better than probably 95% of hockey players on this earth. And so I really don't mean this to be, like, super disparaging of Blake Como, but my thought is, if I'm Klingberg, which it's kind of funny to think about putting myself in an NHL
jersey. I mean, you do both have fabulous hair. I mean, you've probably got more of your original teeth, but that's more vocational than anything else.
Also true. But if I'm John Klingberg and I've got Tyler Seguin as my trailing forward, then hell yeah, I'm going to skate in on Bennington and then slow it down and then hit him right on the tape for a pass, you know, to the slot area that Bennington won't see coming because he's going to anticipate that me being right there on top of him, you know, is going to shoot. But if it's Blake Como, I'm taking the shot.
Yeah.
Like, I'm taking the shot first.
Yeah. You are speaking to the existential crisis of Stars fandom. There is no better way to describe the trauma this team has put its fans through over the past two-ish seasons than John Klingberg spurning a good shooting chance to set up Blake Como. Like, that's why we hurt.
Like, I mean, just, like, conceptually, I get what he was trying to do. He was trying to change the direction of the attack. And that's exactly how you score goals, because the goaltenders in the NHL are just too good. Like, they're all so good at what they do. And so you have to find...
The pads are too big and the nets are too small, but that's not what we're going to talk about tonight.
It's a conversation of a different day. But what I'm saying is like, you know, so I get it. I understand what you're trying to do. But the execution from a personnel standpoint maybe wasn't there. Anyway, that's my aside. I'm done. I will get off my high horse, but next time, please don't do that.
It does seem, you know, to me, kind of veering back, right? So another thing that stood out talking to Rick Bowness is, so far he seems to be, the way he's framing it is, he's not thinking about total line combinations. So far he's thinking about duos, and, you know, his approach to each line seems to be two fixed players and a flex, right? And so he's talked a lot about Seguin and Radulov, he's talked about Ben and Gurianov, and he's talked a lot about I believe it was Henson Robertson on the other line, and he's kind of talked about how he wants to develop relatively consistent duos and then use that third slot to change the tempo, change the character, change the look of a line at a time. And I think this may have been after the Arizona game. It was after one of the games, he's kind of talking about the way the lines come together, which I am not educated across the league enough to know if that's a common practice, but it passed the sniff test for me. It seemed interesting. Is that, you know, does that mirror kind of what you've seen and heard?
Yeah.
There we go. All right, then. Fair enough.
I'm not going to expound on that further.
for the olds like me, dynamite drop in, Monty. Broadcast school's really paid off.
Sorry, I got distracted by a bumblebee.
As you do. But so, you know, it seems like those are his pairs. And it also seems right now, to your point about having three scoring lines, if you're telling me that, you know, Heinz Robertson, Ben and Radulov, and then, or sorry, Ben Seguin and Radulov, then Ben Gurianov. If you're telling me those are three of your foundational duos, then it is encouraging in the sense of that gives you three scoring lines, right? If that's how you're approaching things, then you're approaching things from the perspective of you expect three lines to be able to generate offense, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of things to take away from the preseason to be excited about. There's plenty of things that you can also break down and be like, oh my god, this is the worst, and, you know, it's just continuations of bad habits of seasons past, you know. But at the end of the day, I think two things are going to hold true this season. One, line combinations are never going to matter, because at the end of the day, every team is going to hit stretches where you're going to have injuries, and you need guys to be able to play with anybody else on that roster. you need to have at least some semblance of chemistry when your entire game plan goes to shit. So,
or when it's an away game and the other team has the last change and another good NHL coach has decided that you're just not going to get one of the matchups that you want.
Right. So you need to be able to have that flexibility to be able to do something different or put different looks out there. So, you know, and this isn't unique to the Stars. This is every team. I mean,
certainly the good ones.
Outside of a couple that I can think of, you know, roughly like Tampa didn't seem to do a ton of juggling, but they also put Kucherov into, you know, Robita Island for the season. So it's like a whole nother thing. But and Colorado seems to be fairly consistent, at least with their top guys, but they've been really lucky in a lot of ways in terms of the, you know, injuries to big guys. So I don't know.
I get lucky in the bubble, Taylor.
Well,
sorry.
Neither did the Stars. So,
the Stars got luckier than Colorado did.
Sure. It's all about relativity here. So that's one thing that's going to hold true. Like, the lines are just never going to be consistent. And I think everybody needs to become okay with that. And honestly, like, from the player's perspective, they don't seem to mind. They're just like, oh, I just go out there and play with whoever I'm out there on the ice with. And they're just happy to be here. You know, and then the second thing is you're never going to always get the matchups that you want. So, like you were saying, you are going to have to make in-game adjustments. And there are going to be times where, you know, Bonus is going to throw out Ben Sagan and Radulov and hope that the Supernova line can re-click. And they have some, you know, years past that they can kind of draw on. And they know what each one of, you know, the others does, but you do have a bunch of new guys you got to work in. So,
well, it's, you know, at the margins that you play in at the NHL level, right? The difference between winning and losing could be finding that one impromptu line combination that somehow the other team isn't prepared for, and break, you know, that one night when, you know, Gurionov is playing a certain way and it melds with what Pavelski, you know, like the ability to throw the right combo at the right time is pretty much how a lot of these games are pivoting these days. And so it's sort of like, and since I made a reference for the olds, I'll make one for the youngs. It's like your pokey deck, right? And having more combinations, having more cards gives you the ability to throw that one look that does, you know, that does succeed, versus when you have fewer options and you don't have that same ability, you're stuck reacting unless you have the ability to dictate. And I think that's what they're trying for. That's certainly what they want to do. And so long as health holds up, right, that'll be something that is very different about this year's Stars team versus, you know, last year and even the year before, where they may actually have the ability to do that.
I just can't get over the fact that your reference for the youngs is Pokemon.
I'm very old.
I was about to say, how old are you?
I mean, my 6-year-old comes home with Pokemon cards. That's a normal thing. We battle. I've learned.
Haven't you figured out that a lot of things from the 90s are popular again?
Life is time. What is the pandemic taught us, right? Time is a flat circle.
What is time anyway?
Indeed, yeah, so but it's interesting. It's good. Again, more good than bad. A couple more preseason games to go, and, you know, pretty much the next time we podcast will be the season preview, I think.
Yeah, we've got the Stars have a pair of preseason games against Colorado Avalanche, so pretty good, pretty good measuring stick here to see how the team's shaping up against a pretty stacked Colorado team. You know, both teams will be getting down to the end of their preseason schedules, so you're likely to see a lot more NHL quality roster decisions in those preseason games. So I think there's going to be a lot to draw from. So first one is on Thursday, and then they play again on Saturday, and then the team has a little less than a week off before they open their season on the road against Boston.
So there we go.
In terms of the net at some point in the next week.
It should be. Yeah, this next week is going to be transformational. Hopefully by the time we sit down to do next week's podcast, we'll be able to start speaking in some absolutes. But as always, Taylor, thank you for joining us. KT, thank you for pulling it all together. And hit us up with questions. Get those likes, get those downloads. We're big time now. We got to live up to that Ned's Needle-Rama sponsorship deal. So thanks again, and we'll talk soon.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.